So there's a global pandemic. A virus is sweeping across our world. Still. And society has changed. Why is this happening? Is somebody going to do something about it? Is this just what life is like now? If you haven't considered these questions yet, you will soon. And we'll be here with you, your personal guides on this journey, this descent into chaos. Thank you for joining us on Staring at Goats.
Ladies and gentlemen, that voice you just heard, we have the biggest news. First of all, welcome to Staring at Goats, a show that tells you all about quarantine, how we're living, how and how you should live. Consider us the guidebook on telling you what to do.
Guidebook.
They're more like guidelines than actual laws, really. I'm your host, Steven, joined as always by my amazing co-host, Jacob. And now, joining us for the foreseeable future, as long as he can possibly stand it, TV's Travis. Welcome to the show, Third Wheel. We are now a tricycle.
Hi-de-ho.
Needs to be this way.
Yeah, it needs to be. Yes. He's up there. Up there.
Which way? I don't know which way I'm pointing.
You're pointing the wrong way.
Opposite. There we go.
There you go. But yeah, so if this is your first time listening to the show, you don't know anything. But if this is your manyth time listening, we have been flip-flopping through guest hosts as time has gone on. We started with our good buddy Lando, who named the show and then promptly left to wander the earth. And we were left scrambling, Jacob and I, trying to figure out, well, what do we want this show to be? Well, maybe it's an interview show. Let's give that a shot. Worked really well. Enjoyed it. Had a lot of people on. Decided we got real tired of stressing over having people on. Decided, you know who fits this show real well, who's easy to talk to? Flippin' TV's Travis. And he was dumb enough to say yes. He would spend an hour and a half with us every evening. Every Wednesday evening. Well, welcome, Travis. We could not be more happy to have you as a super guest and now major co-host on the show. So thanks for being
here. Well, I'm happy to be here, and I'm known for making poor decisions, so this is kind of on brand for me.
Tracks.
well, cheers to that.
Absolutely. Yes. And let's go around real quick. All of us actually have drinks in hand this evening. I'll start since mine's the most pedestrian. I have a Blue Moon Belgian White, regular old everyday. Thank you, Golden Colorado, for your contribution to my alcohol.
Coors has done you a favor. Yeah, me, yes, they have. I am drinking Aviator Brewery's Oatmeal Stout. It's called a Black Mamba Oatmeal Stout. It's pretty tasty. I figured before Thanksgiving, it's right getting into the winter season. It's perfect time for a good porter or stout.
Do it.
Absolutely. And I have a little Bombay Sapphire and tonic with some lime.
Ooh, Travis is bringing the class.
He is. He's bringing the Bombay.
it's the bomb, bay. The kids say bay
and don't
still.
Don't knock your beer, because I'll tell you, Blue Moon's a hell of a beer.
You know, I do enjoy. So before, I wasn't a beer drinker till I was at least 25, and in large part because the only beer I ever had was the Miller Mick Ultra in my dad's fridge, and other dog urine beers. And I didn't know there was good tasting beers. And somebody introduced me to Shock Top at a Miller's Ale House in Tallahassee, Florida, where a man once ripped a urinal off the wall and threw it into the parking lot.
That was on H&H, right?
We did report that in Horseshoes and Hand Grenades every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Tune in. But yeah, so that was a thing. And he gave me a Shock Top. I drank it. I was like, wait, this is beer? This is delicious. And I just learned that wheat beers are my jam. That's kind of my wheelhouse. I like them. And a good Kolsch is also a good beer for me. I'm not going to knock Blue Moon. People can if they want. Bunch of savages.
See, now I think I understand why you like my summer ale, the Rattler that I made for Wally.
Oh yeah,
it's because it's a wheat beer. I make a wheat beer. It's like a summer ale, but its base is really more wheat than it is two row. So I have a feeling that's the reason. It's more of a wheat beer.
I think you may be
now.
Onto
I understand.
Something.
I'm getting you, Steven.
By the way, I'm bringing my growler over to your house and getting some more of that Kolsch out of the keg.
Waiting.
Yeah, I know. I've got one. Have growler will travel, as they say.
Have keg will pour.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know what? It's been a long time since we've done the show in this format. Usually our new guests, we get to go, so tell us about yourself, Travis. How are you and where are you from and what do you do? Well, you know what? Nobody cares because you were here last week telling us those things. Now we get to mistreat you just like any other guest on the show and each other. You're just part of it.
Part of us.
You're just part of the team. So that's right. You can expect the good old hazing that comes with being part of this rickety crew of goobers who talk on the internet. But I figure, sir,
may I have another?
Yes, you may. The good old staring at goats paddle for sale in our Etsy shop. Check it out now.
Where is Scottier when you need him so that he can design one and put it up on Etsy?
He would have that designed and on the website by the end of the show.
Not even by the end of the show. He would have it up in like 18 minutes flat. Done.
I love that he can do that. And I don't even bother like yelling at him about like licensing rights or whatever. Just like, I made a t-shirt and put it on my store to make money. I'm like, well, I wanted the shirt, so this seems like a fair trade.
So, Stephen, I don't know. Scottier and Ashley have this thing. I don't know what it is, but it is a thing where they could say or do the most awful things that you and I would say and do. We would get smacked, or somebody would have something severely negative to say to us if we did the same things they do. But they can get away with it because they do it in such a way that it's just like, that fits their character. That kind of makes sense for them. They're in all good fun. They're still good friends. We're going to trust what they... Everything's fine. They can get away with anything. They're amazing. Superpower.
It really is.
It is. They have an ability that you know, it's kind of like you've set your baseline, right? This works with everybody's personality. Once you establish a baseline of how you are with people, then you have to stay there. And if you go like above or below, people get all weirded out. They just come in, just cannons firing, you know, Navy sixes out, pew, 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 fill your hands. You know, they're just a mess right out of the gate with everybody, so they get to do whatever they want. Like, if I have a bad day one day and I'm slightly not really jovial, people are like, Steven, are you okay? Are you dying? Why are you so mad? I'm like, I'm just a normal person for 5 minutes. Give me a break.
Yeah. But yeah, I know what that's like.
You have that problem, Travis? Are you even keeled? And so whenever you do something weird, people are like, oh, gosh, what's wrong with Travis?
Kind of, yeah. I come off. I project very even keel. I'm a person that's about balance. So, when I go high or low, it's like whoa, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing. I'm having what these things are called emotions, and you have them, and sometimes they boil over.
I have feelings. I'm a human. Leave me alone.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I'm not a robot, damn it.
Yeah, I'm not just here to entertain you all the time. I've got needs. But speaking of needs, you guys, we need to talk about COVID. We are walking into the holiday season. This might be a couple months that most people have dreaded for a while. Maybe in the early days, we didn't even give two thoughts towards Christmas and Thanksgiving. We didn't bother us one bit. July, we started thinking,
right?
Yeah, March. Who cares about Christmas?
Christmas is like
almost a year away. Come on,
I've got a lifetime till then. So you go into March and you're not really thinking about it. July comes around and it kind of passes your thought. You're like, I wonder what Thanksgiving's gonna look like. But then you just kind of move past it because, you know, it's still early in the year.
4th of July, baby, let's celebrate. Pew, pew!
Yeah, everything's still going up, you know. But then we rolled into October. Now people are starting to think, y'all, Thanksgiving's like right around the corner and this is just getting worse. And then comes the fateful mid-November stretch where everyone who is quarantining is realizing, I'm not going to see my family this Thanksgiving. Everyone who isn't quarantining is going, what's everybody so upset about? It's Thanksgiving. I'm going home. And you end up with two camps. You've got the people that are like, meh, F it. I'm going to my house to see my people. College students returning home from college carrying God knows what. And then there's, you know, Then there's the people like us that are having to split time. I would be potentially going to visit parents, or they'd be coming up here. Now I'm splitting time and spending Thanksgiving, you know, sort of in a way on the wrong day with my in-laws. Yeah. And it's just a different season. So as we walk into it, where are we all at mentally? And do we have any tips or thoughts of how to support others as we work our way through this week as we move into Thanksgiving? I know we talked about a little bit of this last week, but it's worth a rehash being that it's the eve of Thanksgiving. Some people might be listening to this show as they sip their Bacardi tomorrow and wish they had a turkey in front of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, do you guys have any thoughts on that?
I do. I actually have a thought because I thought about it earlier. And I got to say, I'm not going to get, I'm going to try to avoid getting political here, but I watched a little bit of Joe Biden and some of his discussion today. And one thing that really struck me, it stood out in his speech today was, you know, we're at war with this virus. We're not at war with each other. And it made me take a step back and go, you know, something I think really that was as wise of a statement as he could have made on the eve of Thanksgiving, because the bottom line is you're going to have two camps of people. You're going to have the people that you say are going to, you know, F it, let's just go on. Let's see everybody. Let's not worry about it. And then you're going to have the other camp that is going to say, well, let's take some reservations here. Let's minimize the size, et cetera. Regardless of the decisions that people make, I think we need to be understanding, offer grace, be forgiving, and really just allow people to make decisions for themselves and try to make the best decision for yourself. And if that means that you need to stay home, then stay home. If that means that you need to like head game or sit at home while the rest of the family goes and visits. I know that he had some things going on with his family, the last week and this week. So, then do that, but don't condemn somebody for doing something that you wouldn't do. I think that's my only advice on the eve of this, is do what you're comfortable with and be safe for yourself and for your family. Do what you can and don't get pissed off. I mean, it's not going to help anybody if you get pissed off and start yelling at people. It's just going to heighten tensions, and that's not something you need right now going into these holidays.
Yeah, I'm thinking about talking about being forgiving and stuff. You know, you got a lot of family who might sit around and be really angry that, you know, Joe Blow's not showing up because he thinks COVID's a big deal, and I'm so angry I don't get to see him this year. And, you know, yeah, don't direct it at them, direct it at the disease and how it's taken its toll on a variety of different people in different ways. It's good. Thank you, Jacob, yeah, for that insight. That was really good.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention just on the heels of this is last year we had a great Thanksgiving. My mother was there. Your parents were there. We had some really good, close personal friends there with their four kids. We had the in-laws there. Your family was there. We were there. There was like 15, 20 people. It was mass chaos. It was beautiful. It was just this symphony of awesome. And everybody was doing their own thing. And, you know, it worked really well. And this year I'm going to miss that because that was a good experience. And I want to try to recreate that. But there's no way that we would do that in the current climate. And I love all those people. I love your in-laws. I love your parents. I love the in-laws. I love my parents. I love my friends. I'm not comfortable enough to do that at this point, but there are some people that are.
Yeah, for sure. Travis, where are you at?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the holiday season for me was always a big one, especially Thanksgiving. Partially, I'll admit, selfishly, because my birthday always falls around it. My birthday this year is tonight. It's the day, night before
Happy Thanksgiving. Birthday! Boom! Holy crap! That's amazing.
Happy birthday!
You can have all these sounds.
And your family win.
But it was always Thanksgiving was always a big holiday for me because my birthday fell around it, and it was always a time that the family got together. And it was either we would flip flop. It would be my dad's side of the family one year, my mom's side the next, and back and forth. And so it was that time where I knew, even with other things throughout the year, I knew I was going to see everybody around that time. And it was a big thing. And to not have that, I mean, I was talking to my parents tonight and I told them, I said, look, I know we're getting together tomorrow. I know we're getting together for Thanksgiving, but they all live together. My sister and my brother-in-law live with my mom and dad. I'm fine with coming over because they're one pod and I'm part of that. They're basically the only other people that I see. But I told my mom straight up, I'm like, if it was a situation where you were bringing more people in, I probably wouldn't be comfortable with that. Not because I feel at risk, more so because I wouldn't be comfortable with the fact that then all these people are going to go back to their separate areas. And if anybody has it, it's just going to make things worse. And we don't need that right now. And trying to explain that to my dad, like, it's not about us getting sick. It's about just minimizing that spread. So that was a big thing for me. And it's rough. It is hard. But Jacob, you're right in that you need to try and show some compassion for other people. And do I hope that people will make the smart choice and not, you know, be like a head gamer who is making a tough choice and staying home while the rest of his family is traveling and visiting?
Yeah.
Because he knows that he just can't, he can't in good conscience do it. That's a hard thing to do, but it's impressive when you can do that. And, you know, you just, sometimes you have to make that hard choice. And I want to just echo, like, have compassion for people that have to make that hard choice and those that can't make that hard choice for one reason or another. They're trying to do their best.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough situation. I had a thought. Oh, this is what it was. It was that this year has been full of impossible questions. Like for our family with a kid going into kindergarten and trying to make that school choice. Do we stay home? Do we go to school? And it's like Thanksgiving. Do I go see my parents? No, can't do that. It all sucks. And like this past weekend, I almost had the opportunity to go see my dad, who I know hasn't been quarantining very well. But I was going to wear a mask. I was going to stay 8 to 10 feet away and just see him, in person. And I was really excited to do that. And I expected to go through with it until, like 5:30 in the morning on Saturday. He was going to be driving back past, you know, an hour away from me, like driving past. And I was going to just meet him at an exit. And he was like, "You don't need to come out here." He's like, "I've just been around too many people. It's just a bad idea." And I didn't expect that phone call. I didn't expect to be told not to come, because he's trying to be responsible. He's like, "I might be doing what I feels comfortable, but I know you're not comfortable, and I shouldn't let you do it, knowing that you don't want to be in that environment." I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, I get it. It sucks. I really was looking forward to that opportunity." So there's yet another impossible choice of like, "Holy crap, my dad's an hour away when he's usually 10. And I could just drive over, catch him, you know, off an exit somewhere, and then just for a few minutes, and then see him go back off. That would have been great, but it's just not in the cards this year, man. It's just not working out for everybody to see people they care about. So instead, you know, just went home in the morning, ate French toast.
And like your parents, I would love for your parents to be up here because I'd love for them to meet William. I think that
that'd be awesome.
Fantastic moment.
Yeah.
Good God, that would be awesome. But it's not in the cards right now.
Not a thing that we can do.
Yeah. And it's the short term hit to hopefully get many more years. Have Thanksgivings and Christmases and everything, because it's only Thanksgiving. We've got Christmas in a month and New Year's in a month. And neither of those are socially distant holidays. So
especially with the weather, the way they're going to be, and it's going to get cold, and Christmas is a holiday that everybody loves to celebrate. I mean, dinner parties are happening every, I know my December is always booked. This year, my social calendar is empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what did we talk about the other day where you were like, "Let me check my calendar." Oh, yeah, I'm fine. You can do whatever, whatever. Oh, that was talking about doing the show tonight, because we were talking about postponing it last week. Because we were like, "We'll skip Thanksgiving, everybody can have a break." But then we all realized we're not going anywhere. We're going to be at home on Wednesday anyway. Why are we not doing a show? So that's why you guys get it. So you can thank COVID that we can't wait. Hold on. Can we keep having the show? Yes, you can thank COVID for this show. Yes. Gross. Don't thank COVID for anything. Sam, the other day, he was sitting in the car and he goes, "I like coronavirus." I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, talk to me about corona." "Well, I get to stay home with you guys. I don't have to go to the school. We don't really have to go do all these things that we used to have to do, no grocery store and all this stuff." I'm like, you know what? I can't fault you for it because you don't know what 250,000 dead people means. You know, like you don't know what 10 million cases means. You're five. Right. You see it from the smallest corner of your world. And you're like, I'm with mom and dad all the time. This is great. What do I need to do other stuff for? And then I'm just sitting there like, what? But there's other children in the world you don't get to see. Do you miss them at all? No. Oh, okay.
Nah, as long as I can watch whatever the gamer he's watching, he's good.
Oh, yeah. He's playing some games. That's for sure.
I was going for a walk this morning, by the way, and I was walking Tater Tot, and a lady that I know happened to be on the other side of the street, and she asked me how I was doing, and I looked at her and said, great, we're doing okay. And she said something about work. And I said, well, I'm working remotely, so I'm able to work from home. And she said, well, that is the silver lining of COVID. She said, you get to watch your son grow up. And I said, wait, what? And she said, well, yeah, if COVID wasn't a thing, you'd be at work. And by the time you got home, he'd probably be in bed. So you would not be seeing anything that your son's doing. And I'm like, you know,
wow.
I didn't really think of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I did. I guess I realized it, but it just struck me when somebody else said it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm able to watch my child grow up rather than be at work watching the, you know, hour that I have with him in the morning.
Yeah, I didn't consider that. I mean, I didn't see Sam roll over for the first time. I was at work. I don't think I remember him crawling for the first time because I was at work. Yeah. I couldn't tell you right now if I remember his first steps. I don't know if I remember them. I might have been there, but I don't remember them. Just because things, man, when you've got work on the brain and you're back and forth all the time, that is a powerful statement. You were supposed to run into her that morning. Like
I was. I really was.
You were supposed to run into her and get that. That's pretty good. So.
Head gamer in the chat was saying that he used to race home to tell his boys bedtime stories each night. So it sounds like he had a very similar situation to you.
Most dads do, man.
Like yeah, exactly.
I was reading an article one day talking about how it said no matter how bad you feel like you're performing as being an absentee father or whatever, you're there more than your dad ever could have been or their dad could have been. And I'm like, you know, that's pretty much true. Like our society now is so much more work-life balance driven, at least in a white collar scenario, like a lot of these businesses and stuff, you know, they're very much into making sure that people get time at home as much as they get time at work. Cause if you get time at home, you're happier to go to work. You don't do it begrudgingly, which is pretty great. But yeah, man, good drive down the lane. We went deep into the pits, and then Jacob brings us right back out. Well done.
I've got it today. I've got the
balance. But in the name of balance, we should also tell some other people's stories. So here we are with the isolation report. Now, Jacob, you gave me this story, and you told me, you didn't give it to me, but it's the only one in here that says Steven should read this. Yeah. I'm angry with you about it, and I want to disclaimer this story that I am not excited to read it. I do not condone the activities in it. It's actually pretty depressing. Jacob, intro this story so I can tell this horrible thing and we can get it out of the way.
Yeah. So on Monday, I was on the phone with a Danish lady. All she wanted to talk about was the election because she was like, oh, what's happening over there? You guys are crazy in America. And so I had to let her know what was going on. And so, of course, you know, I asked her about COVID. I said, well, you know, I know that Europe is taking it pretty seriously over there. How are you guys doing it over in Denmark? And she said, you know, we're encouraged to social distance and we're under a mask mandate and we're asked to work remotely if we can, and we're asked to stay at home where we can and try to minimize how often we go out and minimize the time indoors. And I'm like, you know, this sounds unbelievably familiar to where we're at. I said, you know, this is almost identical to what we're currently seeing. And she was like, oh, really? And I said, yeah, it's very similar. And she was like, well, you know, this past weekend in Copenhagen, we had a bit of an issue. And I said, oh, well, what was that? She was like, well, all the farmers were blocking the streets. I said, wait, what? She was like, the farmers got in their tractors and blocked the inroads in Copenhagen all along the street. So nobody could move in and out of Copenhagen this weekend. And this is the reason. And I was like, I'm floored by it because I didn't hear about this except from this lady from Denmark. And so that's why I, of course, gave this story to Steven and said, you have to do this story.
So here I am about to do this story. And the title of it is Jacob Made Me Read This. Denmark is about to have to do away with 17 million minks as a mink-to-human spread of the virus has become evident. And do away with means that they just, you know, put them on a boat and sell them to Valhalla. Let's put it that way. witness me. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, we have a great responsibility towards our own population. But with the mutation that has now been found, we have an even greater responsibility for the rest of the world as well. 12 people who've been diagnosed with this virus strain so far, according to the World Health Organization, says about 200 coronavirus cases in total can be traced to exposure from minks. Minks! There are animal-to-human transmission via mink. 17 million minks is a lot of minks. I would have never thought there were that many in Denmark. There's not even 17 million, like, people. How do they smoke weed through their mask? Maybe we should get a Danish person on to tell us how that works.
We need to chat with somebody.
Do they have a weed mask? Does it have a small hole in it for the newbie?
It's overlapped, and you just pull the flaps. You know, it's like the flaps in your underwear. Your ding dong out to pee.
You got a pee flap to smoke out of.
You smoking the reefer. Do they have a large, prominent reefer smoking community in Denmark, or is it just like, hey, some people do, some people don't?
I bet it's
probably. I got to imagine it's like Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just, some there are people
a group
do it.
Of people that will do it and a group that will never do it, right?
Because if you listen to the government, they just assume that if they legalize it, everybody on the planet will be high. I'm here to say I probably won't be a person that smokes the weed. Because I'm not much of a smoker. I don't really, and by much of, I mean I'm not one.
I live in a state where it's legal, recreational and medicinal, and nice. I don't smoke. I could go down and buy some if I want, but I have no desire to.
You know, if you held a gun to my head and said you've got to do something, I wouldn't, I'd probably do like a gummy bear or a cookie or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that I could do.
Yeah, I could probably do that. You know, see, if you really
have. You and Ashley wouldn't do well on weed. I think you'd do better on coke than you would weed.
You think? You think coke? I think so. I'll have to remember that when they legalize recreational coke.
I fear Ashley on coke. That is a frightening thought.
Anyway, back to the story. Thousands of minks recently died in Utah after the coronavirus swept through farms, according to the Boise State Public Radio. Boise is not in Utah, just so we're clear. Idaho and Utah must have some sort of angry rivalry between the two. Utah's over there with their minks getting everybody sick. But the state veterinarian said at the time that people didn't appear to be at risk for the outbreak. Well, good news, everyone.
Well, just to clarify, the reason why they have to get rid of these 17 million mink is because they're farm raised. I mean, most of these animals are farmed just for the fur coats and for their fur. Because, of course, you know, we love our mink hats. We love our mink coats. We love our fur coats.
Do we, though? I don't think we do. 17
million minks are being raised? Yeah, I think so. Somebody loves those damn coats and hats.
Look, not that many people love their mink coat. The synthetic but I will tell you, it's probably fine.
Yeah, the farmers were pissed, though, because, of course, yeah, they're the ones that are going to have to feel all of this. I mean, they're going to get hit right on the chin. They're not going to get money for the minks that they're currently raising. They're going to lose their livestock, so they're going to lose their livelihood, and they're going to have to rebuild. And will the government be there to actually rebuild for them is what they're concerned for, which is the reason why they drove their tractors and parked them in Copenhagen streets.
Ah, the rebellion, the great farmer rebellion. Where they quietly park their tractor in the street and go to the pub.
Yes, yes.
Such a friendly protest. I'm just going to block it and go drink a beer. Come get me later. Sir, could you move your tractor? No. Okay. Rebellion.
I'll come back in 7 to 10 days, according to the CDC. So what happened with the CDC today? The CDC came out and finally are making some data-driven decisions. They actually came out and said, well, you know something, we've been looking at the data And originally we started out with 14 days was a recommendation. It looks like probably 7 to 10 is more appropriate. We're going to update and revise our recommendations over the next couple of weeks. And 7 to 10 days may be the new quarantine, guys. So if you're exposed to somebody, or if you're around somebody new, or if you're around somebody that you haven't been around, or a different pod, you may not have to do the full 14 days, 10 to 14 days. You might only get away with 7 to 10 days now. So there you have it, guys. CDC may be making some data-driven decisions again.
Woo-woo! Oh, man, and turning a corner.
I'm telling you.
Let me tell you.
I mean, 4 to 7 days doesn't feel or sound like a lot until you are in it and you realize it's a non-trivial amount of time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I think nowadays they say data driven. I'm guessing that they're seeing more cases or a high percentage of cases becoming symptomatic or knowing they're positive within 3 to 5 days versus
they said
that
5 days. They said by 5 days, most people are showing symptoms if they're going to show symptoms.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, barring asymptomatic spread, which I found out my neighbor's mom, who's 94, apparently tested positive for COVID, completely asymptomatic.
Really?
Yeah, because she's good in a home and they do regular testing. But he's like,
good as in she tested she's right. Asymptomatic, not good as in she tested positive. Sorry.
Yeah, 94.
Let me clarify.
That's a good thing. I don't know why she was on my mind. So it's possible to get out of this thing, without any symptoms, but she could be spreading it to people while asymptomatic.
Yeah. Who knows?
Worth to consider.
But a lot of these recommendations that I think we're talking about now are actually validating some of the early data that came out. I mean, I remember talking on this show back in May about some of the research that was coming out of the UK, and they were saying, look, 5 days is when you start exhibiting symptoms. If by 7 days you haven't exhibited symptoms, your chances are you're not going to show symptoms.
Yeah.
And that was out of the UK back in May. And so we've been talking about this for 5-6 months now that this was the data. Finally, the CDC is coming out and I think the governor's off, and so they're allowed to start making these data decisions declarations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Travis.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, do you guys find that when you run into random people on the street that don't know you talk about COVID once a week and do all this news research that you almost feel like you have to throw credentials at them so they know that you're not talking out of your butt? Like, because I feel like I have to do that with people I meet who talk about masks. They're like, meh, 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 meh. I'm like, so I do this show once a week where we study the events going around and the data and the conversations and the real stuff, and this is what's going on. And I feel like terribly pretentious sometimes, but it's like those little things, like, I study on this. I don't just read one headline and move on with my life for 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. But at the same time, most of the people that are going to complain about that don't care anyway.
They don't care about our creds. They're like, whatever, no, you're just reading that fake news.
If they just wear their mask and maybe some gloves, they wouldn't have a problem. And speaking of gloves, Malaysia's Top Glove, and I can't figure out if Top Glove is the name of the company or if it's just the Top Glove manufacturer in Malaysia, because the article wasn't super clear about that. But Malaysia's Top Glove is going to close down 28 plants in phases as it seeks to control an outbreak. So the company has seen a huge surge in demand for its personal protective gear since the beginning of the pandemic. However, they've had concerns because their working conditions are bad. And if you've ever seen footage of stuff from Asia, especially some of these places that employ a lot of migrant workers, it's bad. So Monday, Malaysia's health ministry reported a sharp rise in COVID-19 cases in areas where Top Glove factories and dormitories are located. Nearly 5,800 workers have been screened so far, with 2,453 testing positive.
That's half.
That is a frightening number.
Oh my
God.
Yeah. And Top Glove operates 41 factories in Malaysia, with many of its workers coming from Nepal and living in crowded dormitory complexes. So they're stacked like cordwood in these dorms. And let's see, all those who have tested positive have been hospitalized and their close contacts have been quarantined to avoid infecting other workers. Director General of Health Noor Hisham Abdullah told Reuters. So it's unclear whether when the factory closures are going to begin, but they're going to do them in stages. But that's they're a major supplier of protective gloves. They've come under fire for some of their practices in terms of like how they pay people and the working conditions that they have. 72-hour work weeks.
My word.
You know, not withholding pay. There's some sort of recruitment fees that they do, and it's not good working conditions. But that number jumped out at me. 2,400 of the 5,800 that have been screened testing positive. That's frightening.
That's, you know, we talk about states that have 7 to 10%, and you're like, damn, they're at 10%. Yeah. That, watch out, guys. 5%, you're like, ooh, that's still a number that's pretty high, but we could live with it. We're talking about 50%, tenfold higher. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's tough because their working conditions don't allow for good social distancing anyway.
No.
So factory work is always going to be tougher, but they're packing them in and the demand is so high right now that they're trying to churn out more and more product too. So it's like, it's a damned if you do and damned if you don't. They need to meet their quotas. They need to meet the product demand, but they have to also do it in a safe way. And they haven't been doing that clearly.
You think something like this will drive the automation and robotics of these facilities moving forward? Like, I'd imagine that there's a machine or a testing apparatus of some kind that could be constructed to do whatever these factory workers are doing. And is it likely that we'll see some more automation and robotics in these factories that are currently staffed with people moving forward because of situations like this?
I mean, we really should. I have worked in factory situations before. I worked in a factory when I was younger, making oil pans for like Cadillac engines, North Star engines. And at that time, and this was 15, 16 years ago or more, almost 20 years ago, it was so automated that I literally stood in a machine and hit a button and then took the part off and put another part on and hit a button. Like, you could easily have replaced me with a robot.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that they can't do that with some of these. And you're going to see it move forward because it's going to just become more and more cost effective.
I don't know, though. I mean, we say that, yes, automation is coming. It's going to put people out of work. But if you look at what Elon Musk is doing right now with Tesla, he was like, the key to our production is human and interfaces. It's not the robotics and automation. It's actually putting people in there. And then you have Toyota with the Kaizen method and being able to actually produce things in a better way because they listen to their employees and progress their production methods. So there are benefits, I think. And I think some of these companies are starting to realize that they've over automated and that if they actually back off some of the automation, they actually might get a higher quality product, which is what Elon Musk is arguing in Tesla.
I'm going to draw back to the Kaizen method that you just mentioned. So people who might not know, that's the one where anyone on the line can shut it down and improve upon a practice in their area without intervention, right? Isn't that the whole idea? Every line, we stop it when something breaks, we fix it, we make it better, we start it back up, and we just continuous improvement.
Yeah, and everybody feels empowered to actually be able to make those decisions for the company. Yes.
That's actually really cool. That expands to other industries too. They use that method in all kinds of stuff. And IT industries have it as well. Like, as our DevOps workflows go from development to shipped product, how do we improve that as we go along? And anybody can chip in a new piece of something that fixes it or makes it better. Very cool. But Travis, you were going to say something before I so rudely interrupted you.
I was just going to say you know, that was my experience working in a factory. And I think you bring up a good point in that there needs to be human intervention in order to make a better quality product. So we're probably going to see some kind of a hybrid, you know, model more. I just feel like there's certain parts of it that can be more automated to allow for better social distancing, for better control of these things like a pandemic that need to be controlled instead of having to pack everybody in. real tight. And the dormitory situation, too, is tough for a company like this because they're bringing in migrant workers. They need to put them up somewhere. So they create a dormitory, but it's too small for the number of people that they have.
Yeah. And a lot of these require some kind of visual inspection to make sure that, and I'm not sure that the glove actually has this visual inspection technique, but a lot of them are manual because it costs money, lots of money to be able to automate and create these visual inspection systems that are camera driven and automated. So, and a lot of people don't have that kind of capital to dump into their lines. So it's a lot easier. Human resource is a lot cheaper at that point than it is to actually wholesale switch to some automated method of visual inspection. So, yeah, I could definitely see how there's a balance, I think, in the future. But you've got to figure out something, especially something like the visual inspection. That can really be an automated thing. But yeah, maybe some of the other production things aren't.
So no ho-hog replacement, but definitely some areas that could be augmented with robots that might make it better. Good take, gentlemen. Moving right along. The strategy of let's just let it roll has apparently been a problem in Sweden as cases have soared. As the number of deaths and infections surge, Sweden's government has been forced to introduce much tougher regulations to prevent the virus from spreading. Beginning Tuesday, the number of people who can gather in public will be reduced to 8 from 50, and only 8 diners per table will be allowed in restaurants. These are the incredibly tough regulations that Sweden is putting in place. They are hammering it down, let me tell you.
A lockdown culture over there, baby.
Yeah, better watch out. You think, yeah, look at Sweden. They're turning into the friggin' Orwellian universe. Swedish Prime Minister Stefan Löfven issued a stern warning on Sunday night as he explained the new rules. Tonight, in late November 2020, it is clear that it will be some time before we can return to normal, he told the nation in a televised address. Many have neglected the advice during the autumn. It's very frustrating and worrying to hear about the increasing number of sick and dead people, said Mats Gerritsen, 75, adding that the new rules will make little difference to him as he's been limiting his time in public since March. Hi, Mats Gerritsen. Let me introduce you to Staring at Goats, a couple of people who've been limiting everything they've been doing since March.
Can we get him on? Because I really want to ask this guy about there's an increase in sick people and deaths. I want to chat with this guy.
He says, Matt says, however, we will have to wait even longer to see his 12 grandchildren. So he's bummed out. He's just a dude. He's
a grandpa.
Who's been trying. Like, what's it like? I want to act like I can ask the question, what's it like being in a country where you're kind of the minority of people staying home? And then I'm like, I'm in a country where I'm kind of the minority of people staying in. By the way, guys, I rant moment. I ran into the grocery store to grab a couple items and run out late last night when I thought it would be not populated, and it wasn't. There was barely anybody in there. But as I'm checking out, 4 doofuses, teenagers, come wandering in the door, 2 with masks, 2 without, wandering all over the place, talking up a storm. Not a single person. There's a sign on the door. It says your mask is required due to executive order in the state of North Carolina. No one, not one employee in that store told those 2 idiots to leave. And I was so frustrated. I wanted to be that guy. Because here's the thing, like, if you're going to hang a sign, but not enforce the policy, what's the point of even hanging the sign? What's the point of even having a policy? Why would you, if you're not going to empower your employees to go, you're 4 idiot teenagers, you need to go get a mask and then you can come back. I see people without masks and I have an absolute freak out. Like, it's bad enough. Like people with their doodle hanging out over their mask. You know, that's annoying enough. Or worse, the one where they've got it tucked under their bottom lip. And that's like, I'm irritated then. But to see somebody without one is like somebody walking around completely naked. I'm that struck by it at this point. I'm like, I've seen their whole face. What is wrong with these people? I shouldn't know what they look like from the nose down. And I don't trust anyone anymore, and I hate everything. That's all I had to say.
I was driving to the in-laws' house today, and I passed the skate park. And the skate park in Apex was packed. I mean, there were kids on top of kids on top of kids, young kids, old kids, 40-year-olds who want to pretend like they're old kids. There was a ton of people. I saw two masks. And I'm like,
We're in a pandemic, y'all. It ain't even an epidemic. It's a pandemic. Yeah. That means everybody's got it. That means we have to take care of each other. You just want to punch them, because even if their excuse is like, well, I'm not worried, I'm young, it's like, that's nice, good for you. You don't have to worry because you're young, but you could walk around somebody who does because they're old or has asthma. Well, and
you're going to your grandparents' house tomorrow for Thanksgiving. It's like, yeah, okay, yes, you asshole. You're the asshole. I'm sorry, you're the asshole. Yeah.
You bunch of little buttholes. I hate you.
All 200 of you. Well, and there were parents just standing around chatting with one another, just without masks, just hanging out. And I'm like, something. How did we get here? How did we get here?
I don't get it. I struggle with it every time I see them. Like, it's a piece of cloth. It's just a piece of cloth. Yeah. If you put it over your face, you potentially prevent death. Like, if somebody told you that a piece of cloth could prevent death, you should want to wear it. You should be like, yes, preventing death is good. Not having dead people in my life is a great thing. I think I'd like that. But instead, we get this, man, I'm young. I don't need to worry about no virus. There's only a 0.02% chance you die anyway. Yeah, 0.02% for you, you dumb butt. There could be somebody you walk around that's like, hey, I could die tomorrow because I've got emphysema. Yeah, freaking, I hate everybody. I don't get it. And if you don't wear your mask and you go doodling around, I have no respect for you. I don't care who you are.
Nope.
Pull yourself together. Pull your head out of your butt. Wear your mask when you go places because you're endangering people who aren't asking for it.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the worst part. The two things that bother me the most are, it's one thing for the four young guys to come into the store and two of them not having masks. Whatever. Young kids can be jack wagons.
Sure.
That's going to happen. We can call them
Jack Nuggets. I also like Jack Wagon.
Yeah, both.
Jack Nugget, Jack Wagon. I like them both.
Yeah.
But for nobody, no employees in the store to either take it upon themselves to say something or not feel empowered to say something, that really bugs me because, you know, another thing that I did in my youth was I worked at a convenience store and we had, you know, you always see the sign, no shirt, no shoes, no service. Mm-hmm. And I was right by a beach. So you'd always get people coming off the water, coming in, and they'd wander in without shoes on. I was told my first day, the manager of the store, he ran the store. He's like, look, anybody comes in here without a shirt or shoes, you tell them to walk back out and come back in with something. He made sure I knew that I had that power. Right away.
Yeah.
Employers need to do that because you have to be able to tell people these things. It's not. And as an employee, you need to feel as though you can say something to somebody regardless of the backlash you're going to get because you're going to.
So here's a question. I mean, because that's the no shirt, no shoes, no service. That's a policy that I think employees or companies have, mainly convenience stores, but companies have. That, you know, you could just look at somebody and go put a shirt on. This is a little bit different because it's not a political, no shirt, no shoes, no service is not a political thing. Whereas no masks, it's an executive order. It's a political thing. People want to push the boundaries and say, no, I don't believe you. I don't believe that. I'm not listening to our douchebag governor. I mean, that's the comments that you're going to get, right? So how do you balance that?
It's only a politicized thing now because we've made that politicized. The no shirt, no shoes, no service would have been if it was enacted now. It's just we're used to it. We're used to it now because it's been around since I was a kid.
Yeah. So just go with your wing wang hanging out and say, look, I got a shirt, shoes.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the mask with the nose hanging out, I'm now going to refer to that as a dick nose or a Dino.
Dino. So if I see anybody
with that, their name is Dino.
Got this Dino over there. Dino. Be careful. Watch out.
Dino over there. Well, you know exactly what somebody's talking about. So
you want to know who will not have a Dino this weekend? Nick Saban will not have a Dino this weekend. And the reason why is because he tested positive for coronavirus and he will not be on the sidelines for the Iron Bowl, guys. Auburn, Alabama, Roll Tide, War Eagle.
War Eagle, baby.
That's right. He won't be there. So for the second time, Alabama Crimson Tide head coach Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID-19. The university said in a statement, he has very mild symptoms, so this test will not be categorized as a false positive. He will follow all of the appropriate guidelines and isolate at home. Alabama has averaged over 1,000 new COVID cases per day for 42 straight days. Their 7-day running average is pretty high, blah, 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 blah. That's interesting because North Carolina is over 4,000 at this point. And I'm like, 1,000? I would love to be back in that category. We're like 4X that right now.
We're 4,000 a day every day?
Yep, 4,000 a day every day. Good Lord. We see about 25 to 30 people. Between 25 and 50 people have died every day here in North Carolina. Roughly 4,000 people have gotten it every day here in North Carolina. Yeah.
It's all from that freaking skate park. They're probably centralized like a lot in Charlotte. Probably Raleigh, Wake County's in the governor. Our governor put out a new map to kind of give you an idea of how your county looks. So there's significant, which is the lowest numbers. It doesn't go down to mild or medium or blazing or whatever. It's just like it's bland. There's no bland. There's just significant, extraordinary, critical, or something like that. Like those are our three numbers. There's no zero. And Wake County is a significant number of people, which is better than some of the areas. I've seen some counties in North Carolina that were insane. They're in the critical number. And that's Mecklenburg County over where Charlotte is. Yeah. A couple of the southern counties bordering South Carolina are pretty hot. Yeah. But
a lot of the rural counties, good. Rural counties are really struggling right
why
now.
Why is there, Jacob? Why is it? It's because of the redneck bubble of protection.
Let's get on the redneck bubble of protection.
Well, there's that, and there's also we're 2.5-3 weeks after a bunch of people were all getting together to vote.
Yes. Yes.
And those rural counties, most of the rural county people aren't voting by mail, aren't voting absentee. They're going to their precinct to vote. So
because their fearless leader told them to.
I know. Oh, I know.
Because their fearless leader told them to. And they've got the redneck bubble of protection that keeps them safe. They wear enough camo and the COVID can't find them. It's absurd. And I mean, it should not be split. I mean, y'all have observed it too. It should not be split into blues and reds in the less cases in blue areas, more cases in red areas. It should not be that way. But it is. In a lot of instances, you notice that these areas that are highly populated but are bluer seem to be complying with the mask mandates. Like Wake County's lower. But then you've got these edge counties that are higher that have less people that shouldn't be a problem. The political aspect of it is stupid, and I hate it.
Well, let's move on from the political aspect and just talk about the actual ramifications of this. The healthcare systems in those rural areas cannot handle these number of COVID cases.
No,
they can't even handle one COVID case, much less hundreds. And so they're getting inundated with these COVID cases and shipping them off to the Wake counties or the Raleighs or the Charlotte Mecklenburg areas or the Atlanta Georgias or the New York City, wherever your major metropolitan areas are to be treated because they're the only ones with the bandwidth right now to be able to help those people. If you look at some of the rural areas in North Carolina, the small rural hospitals aren't being able to help them. So they're shipping them off to these other bigger cities so that they can help them.
Well, we heard that in West Virginia in our visit. We heard the guy say, oh, if somebody shows up positive, we just send them to Morgantown.
Send them straight to the big hospital.
You know, and something that kind of dovetails with what we were talking about earlier, if you're young and you don't feel like you're going to have a whole lot of issues with catching it, you know, I'm young, I'm in good shape, all that. But if you get sick enough to have to be in a hospital, that is a hospital bed that is not there for somebody who is going to have major problems and you are clogging the system. Take yourself out of that loop. Damn. Wear a damn mask. Stay at home. It's not that hard. You can do it. You've got the internet, you're fine. I've been doing it since freaking March. I'm good.
We've been saying that for 9 months, Stephen.
I feel like I'm hoping.
I feel like a broken record over here. E-Webs!
Eric Webb shows up. He says, drink bleach. You'll be okay.
Yeah, inject yourself with sunlight.
My dad has always insisted on Crown and Coke in the evening. Just that's what you do. You have a Crown and Coke in the evening and you don't get sick. He's probably been doing less to protect himself than some, and has managed to make it with still not getting it. I'm starting to put stock into the Crown and Coke theory of survival that he's pitched for most of my life.
It's like the grumpy old men. You eat bacon for breakfast and you usually drink your dinner. I mean, that's how you make it 95 years.
It seems unfair that the most pious vegetarian of us all dies at 55 from a massive heart attack. And the you know, smoking, drinking, spitting, coughing, whatever, you make it to 90. It's like, what it is. Maybe Trump is right. Maybe everyone does have a life battery, and it doesn't matter what you do. It just, you wear out your life battery and you die.
I love it.
Maybe there's something to that theory.
It could be. Australian spy agencies collect data via COVID tracing app. So Australia's intelligence agency have been caught incidentally collecting data from the country's COVID safe contact tracing app during the first 6 months of its launch. It was a government watchdog found this, and the report published Monday, Inspector General for the Intelligence Committee, which oversees the government's spy and eavesdropping agencies. I want to work for an eavesdropping agency.
Yeah, just let's like call it that.
That would be a great job.
That's a very bold title. They're not trying to hide it. Look,
nope, not at all. Credit to the Aussies for that. Said that the app data was scooped up in the course of lawful collection of other data. Yeah, but the watchdog said that there was no evidence that any agency decrypted, accessed, or used any COVID app data. So this just was one of those that I kind of wanted to talk about and bring up, because incidental collection isn't an uncommon thing. And the story even talked about this was on TechCrunch. Incidental collection is a common term used by spies to describe the data that is not deliberately targeted, but collected as part of a wider collection effort. So they're tapping into a fiber optic cable, or they're getting some data, and this just happens to be caught in the dragnet of stuff that they pull up. Usually it's execution of warrants or something along those lines. And, you know, we can go full tinfoil hat for a second and just say, look, if the government wants the info, they're going to get it. It doesn't matter. But because a good majority of that information is encrypted and there's no evidence that they decrypted any of that, that's okay. That's a little bit better. This was an app that used, there's basically two types of kind of collection apps that have been going around. More privacy focused apps are using Bluetooth, which there'll be some personally identifying information, usually like name, zip code, phone number, but that's about it. And they typically, a lot of that information is gathered as a way to contact people in case they can trace something and say, hey, you may have been around somebody who was contagious. But this was an app that used Bluetooth. So that is less identifying than apps that use location data, which some countries, Pakistan was one, and I think Israel was another, that was using location data. And that was kind of frowned upon. The report did not say when the incidental collection stopped, but noted that the agencies were, quote, taking active steps to ensure compliance, unquote, with the law, and that the data would be deleted as soon as practicable without setting a firm date. So what the Australian agencies are saying is, look, we got a bunch of data. We're not doing anything with it. We're going to get rid of it when we can. Your mileage may vary on whether or not you believe that, but this isn't an abnormal thing. I just thought it was interesting to bring up because it's most likely happening with a lot of stuff. We just aren't hearing about it.
Yeah,
but it's not uncommon for the intelligence community to gather, because they gather data in mass and then they have to sift through it. That's the whole point of the analyst, is to sift through the data and find what is usable and what is actionable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
It really does leave the onus on the communicator or the app itself to deal with the encryption, because it's going to get picked up. It's kind of like email is not an encrypted medium, you guys. If you say email is not safe, never send anyone your social security number through email. iMessage it before you send it through email. Use WhatsApp before you send it through email. Those are end-to-end encrypted services. That means you hold a key and they hold a key, and even the man in the middle can't open it. That's good. Email is, I could type, instead of TV's Travis at Gmail, I could type TV's Travis's, and then some other rando has my information now, because there's no checks and balances to that at all. This has been a very good security.
You can intercept that. So
sure, yeah. If I send it over Wi-Fi and you just catch the packets and you can open it right up, I could show you one day. It's really exciting. If you don't have your wireless router encrypted, then the communication going through the air can be picked up by anybody. And it's like, oh, look at these. This is a password. Easy peasy. Computer security is important, and I actually think it should be taught in schools to a greater degree, because we all use the internet now and we're all susceptible. And hey, if you know internet things, volunteer at your local high school. Tell people about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's a lot of people don't know. That's why you're using the same password all over your bank accounts. 123 potatoes and me is not a good password.
You mean password 1234 is not a good password?
Password 1234 exclamation point, booyah. You know, they ran a large password like dictionary through a simple, or like a database through a simple dictionary hack one point, just to see what would come out. The simple dictionary hack, now that it includes numbers and symbols and puts them in certain places, was able to crack like 80% of the passwords in that database in no time flat. Because when it says use a number and a symbol, most people put the numbers and symbols at the end. Most people use one exclamation point or one at symbol. It's really common to see passwords like that. The capital letters always at the front. Because of those simple things, they know people's behavior is, it's easy for them to crack all those passwords. In rapid fashion. So you need to be really careful. Passphrases are good. If nothing else, just type in, my first baby was born on October 1st, 1982 at 6 a.m. And it's really long, but it's better than nothing.
Also spaces. If you can put spaces in, that messes with stuff so much.
Yeah.
At least that's been my experience. So yeah, passphrases, spaces, mnemonic devices. Mm-hmm. Of some way, like I could tell people what my password is because of the mnemonic that I use for it, and they couldn't figure it out. So
yeah,
I try to do that with stuff too. And then password managers.
Sure.
Use password managers.
LastPass.
This show is not sponsored by LastPass, but I've been using it for years and I don't know any of my passwords except for one. And that's
Ashley goes, Jacob, what's your password to Amazon? I'm like,
I don't know.
I don't
have a clue. Log into LastPass. She was like, I am logged into LastPass. I'm like, well, then you have the password. I don't. <It's there.
laughs> Stephanie and I have a shared vault now with her account and my account. We don't have a clue how to use it, but I just know I put a lot of passwords in it. I'm like, here's all the bank stuff in case I get hit by a bus. And she's like, don't say things like that. I'm like, well, if I get hit by a bus, there's all the stuff. Or if I don't get hit by the bus and you just want to log in, that's because I'm not an overbearing 1950s husband who says you can't see any of my stuff, our stuff.
Oh, yeah. Ashley's got the one password she needs, which is the last pass password. That's the only one she needs.
Something terrible happens, that's where you go. As then the entire internet listening to this show is like, quick, find out their last passes. Surely they've screwed up somewhere. We'll take all their stuff. Okay, Jacob, deep dive. And it's a good time for a deep dive because we're an hour in for the show. Let's dive deep. Vaccinations. Mm-hmm. What you want to talk about?
So I have an infant son. Well, he's slowly reaching toddler stage because the boy is everywhere now. I mean, it's funny. He's crawling now, and he went from zero to hero crawling. It's 1 minute he's barely moving along, and you know, you can keep up with him. The next minute he's across the house, and I'm like, how did you get over there? Shoot. But the question I have is, you know, right now, a lot of the regulations are, and even the doctors are saying, look, if your child's under 2 years old, don't put a mask on them, because it could do more harm than good to an infant or to a really young child. And so I'm like, okay, so what do we do? Of course, we just don't take our kid out. Our kid just hangs out with our bubble, and that's pretty much it, which we're okay with to a certain degree. So now we're talking about vaccinations. And so I went to the doctor today with my father-in-law, and you know, one of the questions that came up at the doctor's office was, well, what about the COVID vaccine? I know that we're in a high-risk category. Are we going to be, you know, what does that look like? And so the doctor was actually very well informed. He said, look, our healthcare system is going to choose one of the companies to partner with. And once that decision's made, then they're going to roll it out. And obviously you'll be one of the high priority people. And I'm like, okay, well, that's good. At least you've got the administration piece started rolling and you're figuring this out. And even the doctors, I think, were briefed on it. So I'm like, okay, what about infants? Because a lot of times you question whether or not to give infants the number of vaccines they're getting, because they're getting a shit ton of vaccines that first year, 2 years. The vaccine has not been tested on infants. It has not been tested on children. It's been tested on adults. So we do not understand anything about what happens in infants and children. So what do we do with infants and children? Do we just roll the dice and give them the vaccination? Do we wait for more data? What are your guys' thoughts? What should we do as parents?
This kind of thought makes you want to throw up, this. Jacob.
Yeah. Well,
would you vaccinate Emerald? Just pretend Emerald's your child.
I mean, he basically is.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would, but he's not an infant. He's, you know, he's an old man. He's 13. So he's an octogenarian when it comes to dogs.
Yeah, that's true.
That's such a tough one, because you're right. Like, the hard part is that there's so many vaccines that babies are already going through on top of this. And we just don't have the data to know. So it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm all in for people getting vaccinations. I'm like, okay, go get them. But
absolutely.
I'm 100% all in on people that have been tested with this. I mean, adults have definitely been tested at this moment for this vaccination. Children and infants have not. We're assuming that they're going to work not only just as effectively, but also there's not going to be any long-term ramifications in young children. And yeah, I don't know if any of that's true.
Yeah, we can't know.
It's tough. That's, I think the youngest they tested was a 12-year-old. Because there's ethical implications too with testing vaccinations on children. There's ethics to be involved, and I understand why they don't test on younger kids. And you just have to assume, well, okay, we just give them. I mean, but they give them the flu shot, but I know the flu shot has just huge amounts of data behind it. We give them measles, mumps, rubella. You know, we give them the
30 years, 50 years worth of data.
Tdaps. We give them Tdaps. We give them polio vaccine. Everybody gets vaccines as children, and I don't know. Aside from the mRNA aspect of this vaccine, which is brand new, and new in a sense that this will be the first approved one. Not new in a sense they haven't researched it. This has been. Correct. In the red tape factory that is the FDA for a long, 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 long time.
Well, and there's a reason why the FDA has been hesitant to really say, here's my rubber stamp, let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's rock and roll with these mRNA vaccines, right? They have not rolled them out.
Yeah. Right.
So, all of a sudden, I'm going, wait, hold on. There's a reason why the FDA was uncomfortable to begin with. But now we're just going to ignore those uncomfortable feelings and move forward with them, which, you know, the data supports what the data supports. But at the same time, I'm not sure we have the understanding in kids yet. And so I'm over here going, well,
huh?
Because at that point, if you decide not to get your child immunized because they're either too young or there's not enough data, or you have absolutely no clue of how it works, because don't lie and say we understand it, because we don't. We have no idea what's going to happen in kids whenever they take this vaccine. But if we decide, yes, we're going to do it, then great. Well, let's move forward and let's start looking at long-term effects. If we don't do it, then we have to rely on the country getting herd immunity. And so we have to rely on 60, 70, 80-plus percent people actually either getting the virus or getting a vaccination. And do you think that's going to happen? Chances are probably not. So you're back to your original question, which is, well, shit, do you go ahead and immunize on a lack of data?
And you'd like to come back and be like, we've grown a lot in our knowledge of science and vaccines and the human body since the thalidomide problem of the 1950s and 60s. You know, not to bring that up and freak anybody out, but that was marketed as a morning sickness pill. Relieve your morning sickness. You just ended up growing babies that were horribly deformed. It was approved. You could use it for that purpose. That's a tragedy. That's a global tragedy. And I do think about that when I think about new things on the market. But I also do believe we've done our very best to try and make it as safe as possible. And at some point, like, I've got an asthmatic son. I'm going to hold my nose and tell him to get it. Just hope for the best.
But that is the definition of rolling the dice, though, right? I mean, we're just going to say, let's roll the dice and let's pray. And we're going to have to put faith in the adult population and the children population and that correlation actually holding up, which we don't know. I mean, we're assuming the answer is yes, because, oh, why wouldn't it? But there are a billion reasons why it would.
I would like to believe that there has been enough testing and research in how it interacts with your body that they could say with some degree of confidence that this is a basic bodily reaction to this thing that will that you know, barring age, it doesn't make a difference. This is how your body's going to react to this delivery mechanism and this type of virus, and it would be okay. I mean, the virus gets in people themselves with the messenger RNA spike protein.
But that's the whole point, because I feel like if you're a protein-based antibody or a protein-based vaccination, right?
Yeah.
You've got a ton of data behind you.
Sure.
If you're an mRNA antibody, you have none, especially in kids. Yeah, you might have some in adults. You might have some from clinical trials from different companies, but I guarantee you don't have any in kids.
Yeah,
which I'm not going to argue is exactly. They've got to just mass roll it out and hope. There's got to be a leap of faith at some point, because it's going to be probably some ethics decision that's going to have to be made to actually do some studies on this.
I am not a scientist. You are a resident scientist, and is just goober father with a kid that knows that the vaccine is the ticket to first grade.
Yes.
I mean, it is. It's straight up
100% is. Yes.
Is the ticket to first grade and a somewhat normal life for my son, who basically lives like a boy in a bubble right now. It's worth it to me based on the information I have, and knowing that Stephanie, being a pharmacist, also a scientist in her own right, would not put something in Sam that she didn't trust. Or have a high enough level of confidence that it is worth giving it a go, you know? And so far, she is.
Go ahead, Travis.
And I was just going to say, I think that's really the most level-headed and best thing that you can do, is make the decision you can based on the information that you have.
Sure.
Now, is there a possibility that down the road you'll find out that the information you had didn't bear out the way that you thought that it would? Sure, there is. It's a risk, but you just have to weigh everything. And honestly, it's the best choice that you can make right now. Yeah. And as long as you feel as though you're making the best choice, that's really what matters.
I mean, where I'm at right now with my choices, I probably won't go for the mRNA one that comes out immediately. I'll probably wait for the protein-based one. And the minute that comes out, that's what I'll give Tater Tot. I will not give him the mRNA one, just because there's zero data on it, and I would kick myself right in the dick every time I thought about it if something were to happen and I gave it to an infant child without any data.
And I think that's the biggest difference there is the infant child versus 5, 6, 7 years old, right? So the infant child is basically going to be with mom and dad all the time anyway. Mm-hmm. So he's not missing out on as much. There isn't as much of a balance thing that you have to do with somebody who's, you know, between that those ages of 5 and 12, where we're not sure exactly what could happen, but they also sort of need, like, it's a tough one, but you're right. And that's the best choice that you can make. So I think that's a smart way to go about it.
Yeah. But me, I'll be the first one in line for the mRNA one just because.
Oh, I'll be there.
I'll waiting. Let's roll this dice. I'm an adult. They've done tests on populations that I fall directly into those categories.
Yep. Same here.
As far as tater tots concerned, I'm leaning toward waiting, but I just don't know.
You've had a good ride, Jacob. You know, if that vaccine sucks, you can go, had a good time. I'm kidding.
Well, there it goes. It came in one arm and I'm out the door.
See you later, everybody. So I read, this is a terrible tangent. This is terrible. I was reading the last words of famous people. Groucho Marx. If you're not familiar with Groucho Marx, the dude's a comedic genius. Lived a bunch a long time ago, and his final words as he was passing away was, "This is no way to live." Dude was killing it on his death. He never stopped. I was like, that's my plan. It's just to throw out a zinger on my way out the door, because I was impressed. It's like, well done to keep your wherewithal. It'd be like, this is no way to live. Oh, you'd be chuckling every time you thought about it. Trump
Marks thing to say too. Like, that's so perfect.
Yes, he was a genius. But hey, I think the vaccine's going to turn out all right. I didn't know that they were working on a protein one in tandem with the mRNA one. So that's news to me.
Well, there are only two mRNA ones, and they're the two ones that are out. The other ones are all doing really well. I mean, they're still. Protein ones are still in clinical trials, phase 3 clinical trials. And it looks like there are going to be a couple of protein options right on the heels of the mRNA ones.
Don't tell me that, because then that makes me want to just hang out for a little bit. Like you said, the protein ones have a possibility of doing just as well and being backed by a lot of research.
It's going to be a call. And the difference is, Ace, I know you mentioned in chat, what are the differences between the two? They're just two different mechanisms of actions. One is either they take a fragment of the actual virus and generate antibodies based on that fragment of the virus, or you actually give dead virus. And so you're relying on that protein interaction to generate antibodies. Whereas in the mRNA one, it actually goes into your cells and interacts with your DNA so that you actually make the protein that then interacts. And so your body actually becomes this producer of this protein that your body then finds and figures out how to attack. So it's right. Different in the way it actually works. And one is fed the protein, whereas one is fed the DNA strand. So, or the RNA strands in this case.
Yeah. One of them is just leaving flyers around your college talking about whatever cause, and you're just going, oh, these are stupid, throwing them away. The other one is actually going, talking to yourselves or your students, saying, here, you pass out some of these too. And then they're all like, oh, cool, we're all passing these out, but they're stupid. They're just dead things. But now we're all, you don't want me here anymore? And then you kick them out. It's the best knowledge I got.
Well, and the one thing I just don't know about, and I'm ignorant in this part of the subject, is I don't know how long the mRNA virus will stick around as far as the actual replicating spacer and how long that will interact with your cells and how long you'll be producing this protein. Those are the questions that I just don't have answers, because I just haven't, frankly, done the research on that specific vaccine.
And those are the terrifying ones. When you talk about a messenger RNA actually spikes your cells and causes it to produce a protein, like, what if it just keeps going and then my antibodies just eat me because, like, all my cells are creating now I know that's not likely, probably not even in the realm of possibility, but it scares you a little bit when you think about it in those terms. Like, it's doing something to your body that a protein-based vaccine is just dumping in a protein and your body's handling it.
This yeah, your body's like, just responding to an external stimulus. It's going, right. Oh, that's external. That's foreign. It's a protein. Let me go attack it. This is, we're going to actually infiltrate your cells and start producing this. And oh, it's foreign.
Yeah,
I think. And I think that's that could be the reason why the FDA is like, let's get a little more information because we just don't understand. I don't know, but I could definitely see why the FDA would go, well, there are a few questions here, and let's make sure that we have the answers because, you know, public health and all. And so, yeah, and especially in kids, I just don't know. This is brand new. It's novel. It's something that's never been tested in kids. So, yeah, adults, we're testing it now, and so we're getting some data now, and we've got some data in adults for the last few years, but I just – something different, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's all heaven you are.
Heaven forbid we use a data-driven approach, right?
Oh. Crazy idea. What do you think?
You didn't get any good answers from us other than a roundabout circle of fear and desperation.
Well, so I will pose this. I mean, that obviously this is going to be an MP3 that goes out there, and I'm hoping that the people that listen to it, if you guys have thoughts, if you guys have opinions, staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com, I really want to hear what your thoughts are in this one because
absolutely,
yeah,
I just don't know, and I would love to hear what other people think about this.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think this particular topic is important because it matters how many people get the vaccine matters in our overcoming this thing.
Absolutely.
In a reasonable time frame. Mm-hmm. Whether we fight this for 2 years or 2 decades really depends on people's willingness to either wear a mask and social distance and wash their hands or get a vaccine. And it's not one or the other all the way. It's just like, if you're going to go out, get the vaccine. If you're not going to go out, maybe you don't need the vaccine, but maybe you are you're better about Matt, because that's really the way you handle it, right? That's the way this thing is fought. If we didn't have vaccines, we would fight it with washed hands and masked faces and in isolation. And we chose not to do that. So if you're going to choose not to do that and also choose not to get a vaccine, screw you. You're terrible.
You're not doing anything.
You're not doing anything for anybody other than just living your life and hoping you don't die and get other people dead while you're at it. So just pick one or the other. Just wear the mask or get the vaccine. That's all I have to say about that. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a wonderful place to stop this episode of Staring at Goats. We don't have any mail, I don't think. That's actually from the notes from last week, but I don't think we have any mail. You guys should email us at staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. I think that would be a great idea. So we could get some news from you. Yeah, no mail. No mail in the mailbox. You see my sadness in my voice? That's all of us crying a shared tear.
Send us the mail, people. Come on.
Yeah, send us the mail. We want to hear it ain't you. That hard. staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. We've got no guests next week because Travis is a full-time member of the show joining us every single guests? Week. Yeah, who needs guests?
We've got this beard.
TV I know. Travis.
I will tell you, your dog made a special guest appearance for a little while, and it was glorious.
He did.
Yeah.
He was glorious. Oh, yeah.
Emeril is the best. We haven't had a pet mascot on the show for a while. So thanks, Emeril, for being here with us as well. If you like this show, man, give us a review. If you'd like to hear more from us, there's really no way to do that. Or to follow us on Twitter. I'm Steve H&H. TV's Travis is TV's Travis. Wow. And Jacob is the only smart one of us who doesn't use social media. So just... you know, if you want to get to him, just go through me or Travis, and we'll relay the message over the old teletype. We'll get it over to him. If you want to support the show, Patreon is the place to do it. tudorks.net/support. You can pitch in $1 a month. That means the world to us. Every time we get one, you'll join the ranks of wonderful people like Hammer Dwarf, Og, Adam and Christina of Geekheim, Oddly Normal One, and our parents who support us every single month with their hard-earned dollars. Don't forget... charity streams coming up next week, December 4th. Reach out to me via Twitter or via email at staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. If you have any games that you are not playing, that you have keys for, that you're like, I'm never going to use this key. So if you want to give away this game, that would be fine. If you have those laying around, would love to hear about it because we want to do some giveaways during our charity stream. And that would be huge for us. Very helpful. We got our schedule locked down. We got the bits locked down. We are going to do some amazing stuff, and we're going to play some Phasmagoria. No, Phasmophobia.
Phasmophobia.
Yep. There's a, look, that's going to be some fun. There was an adventure game in the early 90s called Phantasmagoria, and I get the two confused constantly. So I've been calling it Phantasmophobia for like the past 3 weeks, only to learn it's called Phasmophobia when I went to buy it.
Yeah. I did the exact same thing for the first week that the game became like got into the public consciousness. I'm like, yeah, Phantasmophobia. And so, and then I'd get the weird look.
Yeah. You know? What are you talking about?
Yeah. That's going to be fun. I can't wait to play that.
For sure. And Hello Neighbor. Yeah. We should give that a try. Head Gamer did a stream and he played Hello Neighbor and I cried. It was so scary. It was so cartoony and misleading. It was terrifying.
I may have to play that because I was actually pretty good at solving some of those puzzles. I was trying to help Head Gamer in the chat while he was
you
playing.
You should do it. You should do it. I think you've got a blank spot. You still got to figure out what game to play. So you should give it a try.
Yeah. Rayman Legends is one that I was thinking about playing just because it's so much fun when you're doing the music levels and just, you know, that platformer is a lot of fun.
It's real great. So anyway, look forward to that next week. Can't wait for you guys to be there for that. And with that, y'all stay safe. Wear your mask. We'll see you next time here. Staring at goats. Ah! Ah!